Keep your psalm books out. We're going to be singing another song in just a few minutes. I'm going to do something a little differently tonight than what I normally do for a lesson. What I want us to do is to take a look at a song and kind of examine a specific song in our book. If you want to turn to number 752, we're going to be singing that in a few minutes. But this is a really meaningful song, and I have three points that I want to talk about when we're looking at this song, "When My Love to Christ Grows Weak." And when you look at the verses, there are five verses, and we're going to sing all five of them in just a few minutes. But there are five verses, but the first two go together, the second two go together, and then the final one will make up my last point. But I think this is a really meaningful song, and I want us to sing it. Like I said, all five verses we'll sing, and then I'll begin with the lesson. So let's sing number 752. This is a really beautiful song that I think gives us three lessons that we need to remember every time we sing these words. And this is a song that we sing from time to time, particularly as a Lord's Supper song. But I think when we're looking at the five verses, like I said, I'm going to be looking at them kind of two by two by one, if that makes sense. When we start with the first two verses, I think the lesson that we get from these two verses is the love that we need to have for Christ. Notice how it begins. It says, "When my love for Christ grows weak." What that does there, that implies that at some point in our Christianity, our faith may falter from time to time. Now, there are a couple of things we can do. We can give into that and abandon our faith, as we all know people who have done that. Or we can remind ourselves what's so important about the love for Christ that we should have. And this is what this is talking about. This is a reminder. When our faith grows weak, if our faith grows weak, we need to put our minds back to the things that Jesus went through. And in the first two verses, it talks about what Jesus went through in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, I think it's safe to say at this moment in Jesus' life, this was the most trying time that he was going through ever in his life. And he was suffering. And that's really what this image in this song, it paints this picture of Jesus' suffering in that garden. And I think it's important for us to look at exactly what Jesus was going through, knowing he is about to be taken to be murdered. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He had foretold his apostles for quite some time, "This is going to happen to me," and now the moment has come. And quite honestly, he's in agony. And that's a very strong word that I think sometimes we misuse or maybe use as a hyperbole, say, "Oh, I'm in agony over this." But Jesus was literally in agony. Turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 26. And I think a word that can come up here as we're looking at what Jesus was going through is just simply anxiety. Now, I think most of us in this room at some time or another understand what it means to go through anxiety. You may remember some time back, not quite a year ago, I gave my lesson talking about some of the struggles that I'd had with anxiety and panic attacks and things like that. And it's something that I think a lot of us have struggled with from time to time, and Jesus is experiencing anxiety here. Let's begin reading with verse 36. In chapter 26, it said, "Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, which would have been James and John, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful." Notice what it says, "even to death." Now, Jesus was about to be put to death. But notice what he says, it's not his body, but it's his soul. He's experiencing this mental turmoil. Not necessarily the physical pain that he's about to go through starting in just a little time from now, but it's this mental pain, this leading up to it. He said, "even to the point of death, remain here and watch me." He said, it continues in verse 39, "and going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as your will.'" I think it's important that we understand what it is Jesus is asking for here. He's saying, "God, please don't make me do this. If there's something else that can be done, let that be done." But he makes the most important statement here at the end. He said, "but it's not about what I want." And at this time, he wanted to get out of doing what it was God had for him to do. He said, "if there's any other way, let that happen. But it's not about my will. It's about your will." I think there are times when we become frustrated when we go to God in prayer and we think, well, God didn't answer this the way that I wanted. It's important to know that God does say no to our prayer requests. And I think this is a great example where we see that happening to his own son, where it was God's will that Jesus continue through the plan that he had set. But at the time, this was something Jesus did not want to do. It was something he was anxious about. And we skip down to verse 42, and it says, "And for a second time he went away and prayed, 'My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done.'" Again, he's saying, "take this away from me, but I will do what it is you've asked me to do." Turn over to Luke 22, and this is Luke's account of what's going on in the garden. And he mentions something, gives a description that's a little different than what we've just read here in terms of describing Jesus' agony. Let's begin reading with verse 41. It says, "And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, 'Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done.'" Verse 43 says, "And there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him, and being in agony, he prayed earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground." Now, this is a description that Luke gives that Matthew didn't necessarily give. That is this description of his sweat drops being like drops of blood. Now, some people describe this, that there's this medical condition where a person can bleed from their face in a similar manner. As the literary person that I am, I take this as figurative language, saying this is a metaphor, a simile, which is a comparison using the words like or as. He's using this as an example, in my opinion, of to show the extent of how much anguish and pain Jesus was in. Is it possible that there was blood coming from his face? I would say it's possible. Some people believe that's what happened. In my case, I tend to take the other side and look at this as figurative language, as a simile. But he shows the agony. And in when we're continuing looking at this song, it says in verse 2, "See the suffering friendless one, weeping, praying there alone." Now, I think one thing that's important to realize is that Jesus took people with him into the garden. He took his inner circle with him into the garden that night. And he wanted them to be there with him. But unfortunately, they weren't quite there for Jesus at the time when he needed them most. Turn back to Matthew 26 and let's continue reading. Let's begin with verse 40. And we see why this description of Jesus being lonely, this friendless one here, rings so true, because he was alone here in the garden. Verse 40 says, "And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, 'So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak.'" Skip down to verse 43. "And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words again. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.'" So here in the garden, Jesus was alone. His friends weren't there with him. I think a concept that many of us understand. We've had times in our lives where we really need people we can count on, but they may not be present or may not be able to help us in the manner that we want. And I think we understand what this is going through. And certainly this adds to the suffering that Jesus endured in the garden, not just the anxiety of knowing what's coming, but this loneliness that he's feeling, this knowing that his friends are forsaking him. And in fact, this is something that Jesus had foretold all of them. He said, at some point, you're going to scatter. Turn over to look back a few verses in the same chapter, beginning with verse 31. It said, "Then Jesus said to them, 'You will all.'" Now, I think sometimes we tend to focus on Peter falling away from Jesus. But notice it said all of them, and all of them did. "Because you will all fall away because of me this night, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." They all scattered. He knew it was going to happen. He knew that they were going to forsake him at some time, the night he was taken to be crucified. At this point, they were with him, but they weren't really with him, because they couldn't stay awake to watch for him. So here in the garden, when we think about our love for Christ, we need to go back and think about the pain he endured before the physical pain even came. So when our love for Christ grows weak, we need to think of that garden. We need to think of the love that Jesus had for us. Remembering Jesus' love and remembering this agony that he went through can strengthen our love for Christ, can strengthen our faith. Number two, verses 3 and 4 really talk about our love for man. Now it begins by saying, "When my love for man grows weak." Now I would say when we're comparing our love for Christ growing weak and our love for man growing weak, the love for man is the one we might would volunteer the information and say, yes, people make me crazy sometimes, right? We will voluntarily admit that sometimes we have trouble getting along with others. There are some people who make it very difficult to love other people. But here it says, when my love for man grows weak, what do I need to do? Well, I need to think about the hill of Calvary. I think it's important to know that on that day, not quite 2,000 years ago, Jesus showed man extreme love. God showed man extreme love in sending His Son, the verse we all know so well, John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only Son." God sent Jesus for the purpose of saving us. Jesus was sent to earth. When you think about it, He was sent for one purpose, and that purpose was to die. You know, I think if we stop and sit back and think about that, none of us want to look at our lives and think, was I sent to earth just to die? That doesn't seem like a very fulfilling purpose to us. But we should be so thankful that that was Jesus' purpose coming to earth, because He was sent to die. Jesus showed us love. He showed love. When we think about, like I mentioned a few moments ago, the agony He went through before the physical pain, but we can't overlook the physical pain that He went through. Of course, He was beaten before He was even hung on the cross. He was beaten. He was weak to the point to where He could not carry His cross to Calvary, which was a custom that the Romans did. They had the person carry their cross, to bear the cross they were going to hang them on. And of course, they compelled a man to carry Jesus' cross for him, because he could not physically do it, because at the point he had been suffering from, he didn't get any sleep that night, he had been beaten, he was weak, and he couldn't carry his cross. And then of course it doesn't take away from the death that he suffered on the cross, the pain and the agony. And I think this is a death that we've, as I think in recent history, we begin to understand from a, I guess, scientific point of view exactly what was happening to Jesus. What the cross did, it essentially caused someone to suffocate to death, being suspended on that cross. And it was customary. There were several different types of crosses that were used during those during the time period. There was the cross that was the X, the cross that we would say the capital T, and then the cross, the lowercase T, which most believe that's what Jesus was crucified on. And it was sometimes the people would be tied to the cross. But usually they would always put nails into their hands to not necessarily to hold them to the cross, but as another method of pain. Some people believe that Jesus would have been tied to the cross along with being nailed to the cross, because if the nail went into his palms, then that wouldn't have necessarily supported the weight of holding him to the cross. But it was customary for the person to be there, to be roped to keep them on, along with being nailed to the cross, their hands and feet. And then, of course, the suffocation that happened. But not just that, the pain that Jesus faced on the cross was, I would say, also emotional pain. Think of all the people that was coming up to him, yelling at him, You saved others, you can't save yourself. If you are who you say you are, come down from that cross. And I think, me personally, I think this had to be a great temptation for Jesus, because he had the power to do exactly that. He could have done whatever he wanted to at that moment. Like the song we sing suggests, he could have called 10,000 angels, but he chose not to. Why? Because of the love that he had for us. But this verse, it still says, when my love for man grows weak. Sometimes it's hard for us to love our brothers and sisters in Christ. I've seen people not get along, people who despise brothers and sisters, and sometimes things happen that you know, and some people, like I said before, make it extra difficult to love them. But when we have these moments, when we're tempted to walk away from men and say, I'm tired of these people, we need to remember that Jesus died for them just like he died for us. So that's what this song is saying. When my love for man grows weak, I need to think about Jesus' sacrifice. Why? because he didn't just die for me, he died for the entire world, past, present, and future. And that's something that we need to keep in mind. So we need to think about our love for Christ. We need to think about our love for man. And then the last verse of the song when we're looking at it. I think the main theme in this last verse is sacrifice and self-denial. And when I say self-denial, I mean there are some things that we as Christians have to deny ourselves in order that we can serve Jesus better. Jesus talks about this denial that followers of him have to commit to. Turn to Luke chapter 9. And when we're looking at Luke chapter 9, beginning with verse 23, it says, "And he said to all, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross." Notice what it says. Every once in a while, every week, every month, every year, take up his cross daily and follow me. "For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself?" Verse 24 is really interesting, I think. It says, "For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Now, he's talking to a group of people who may very well lose their life for Jesus at some point, because we know the things that the Christians were going through in the first century is way different than what we go through or what we have gone through. There were people literally being put to death because they decided to take up the cross, to carry that burden. Taking up the cross isn't just an expression. It was a symbol of the burden placed upon people who were marching to their death, just like the burden placed upon Jesus. If we want to follow Jesus, then we have to deny ourselves certain things. There are things that Christians can't do. There are places Christians can't go. Things Christians shouldn't say. And we have to fully commit to these things. So the last verse is all about sacrifice, and it's not about necessarily our sacrifice, but the last verse is about Jesus' sacrifice that teaches us self-sacrifice. Because we did not sacrifice make a sacrifice like Jesus. Now, following Jesus does require sacrifice. And he said that on multiple occasions. He said that, and if you skip ahead in Luke chapter 9 to the end of the chapter, verse 57 through 62, we see some examples of the sacrifice that Jesus talks about to some people who had the desire to follow them. Notice what it says in verse 57. It says, "As they were going along the road, someone said to him, 'I will follow you wherever you go.' And Jesus said, 'That's great, follow me.'" No, he gives him a reality check. He says, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Following me does not mean you're going to have the perfect life. In fact, what we just read, he said, "Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Following Jesus requires sacrifice. It requires self-denial. It requires us taking up our cross every day, like the verse we just read says. So in closing, looking at this song, I think there are some great lessons that we take from it. We look at the love that we should have for Christ. And yes, there may be times when it grows weak, but what do we need to do? We need to think about Jesus' sacrifice. Think about what he did, what he went through in the garden, what he went through on Calvary. We need to think about what he did, not just for us, but for the entire world. We need to look at people not as someone who annoys us or gets on our nerves, but as someone that Jesus died for. And we need to share the gospel with everyone. And then, of course, following Jesus requires sacrifice. So if any of you in here tonight are experiencing this weak love, or experiencing a weak love for Christ, then these are some things to remember in order to change that in your lives. When my love for Christ grows weak, we need to think of His sacrifice. We need to think of His death. And we need to think of others and who we can reach. We know the truth, and we need to share that with others. So if there's anyone here who needs to obey the gospel or needs to respond to the invitation in any way, we'd like to give you the opportunity to do that at this time while we stand and sing.